And welcome back to the second half hour of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. It's likely that the first person to live to be 150 years old has already been born. Amazing advances are taking place in the field of science of youth extension, longevity, adding years of vitality to the lives of people. It's not just a fantasy anymore, but still, it's not a reality either. We're somewhere in between the two stages. And that first person to blow out that candle, the 150 candles on that birthday cake, that person is likely to be a person of wealth and privileged. Who knows how accessible all this technology is going to be for that society once these medical advances actually become a reality. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about how realistic it is that we can have a youth extension. I feel like I aged 100 years in the last hour already, given how things are progressing. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call and talk about what you think will happen when we reach these medical milestones and breakthroughs. Give us a call. The number is 614-8980. You can also email your questions to thesource@tpr.org. And let me welcome our guest in the studio. I have Dr. James Nelson. He's from the Barshop Institute at the UT Health Science Center, and they're doing research there about how to extend life. And they've had some major breakthroughs, but still no elixir of life yet, is there, James?
No. Simply put.
No, so we're gonna he's our reality check, okay? He's not gonna mess around. He's gonna let us know what really is happening. But we do have a guest who is looking at the edge of the frontier. What's going to happen? Because there are plenty of people who believe this is a reality. Sonia Erison is the author of the book 100 Plus, How the Coming Age of Longevity Will Change Everything from Careers and Relationships to Family and Faith. Welcome to The Source, Sonia.
Thank you for having me.
So, Sonia, let's talk about your book, and you can explain what you mean by that. What do you see the future looking like when we do have the ability to tap into longer, healthier life?
Right. Well, it's a long book, and there's a lot of different chapters. I look at, when we can live longer and healthier lives, by the way. So it's healthier. So it's an extension of health spans, not just lifespans. And so I have an entire chapter on the science that will make that possible. But that's really just the beginning of the book. I mean, the rest of the book really looks at how would the economy change, what kind of environmental issues will we face. What about the divide between the haves and the have-nots? What happens to families when we can live longer, healthier lives? Do they get bigger? Yes, they do, and more complex. And even what happens with our religious views? What potentially might happen? What I did is I said, okay, look, humans have extended their life expectancy, doubled it already in the past, and I went back in time and said, okay, well, what happened in all these different areas when we did that? And then, so using that as sort of a guidepost, what might happen if we can do it again? Say we roughly double our life expectancy from, say, 80 to 150. And health span, not just lifespan. How does that change the world? And that's really what my book is about.
So when we say extension of health span, let's try and communicate this a little bit better. So that when I'm 100 years old, I would be like I'm 50 years old or 40 years old or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
And so that it's not trying to put more people in nursing homes and have them on tubes and things for longer. It's so that people are healthier and more vital for many more decades and more and contributing to society for and earning power for many more years.
Exactly. And actually, it's funny that you say that because when I started doing research for the book, it really blew me away how much research had been done in the area of economics. I mean, economists have been obsessed with this in terms of, how has life expectancy and health, gains in health, really changed the economy. And there's been a lot of research done on that.
Right. So, let's go to the phones. We do have a caller who has a point to make about that. Travis, you're on The Source. Welcome to The Source.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to make a comment. I just feel that if we do keep people living until 150, it's great if they're living healthy lives, but I think it might hurt everyone else as a whole if there's only, say, certain people living to 150. I just feel that it'd be better off if we focus more on the health we've got right now, because death is a part of life, and I think I'll just go ahead and take that off the air with that.
All right, Travis, thank you for your call. We appreciate that. So he says that, I mean, that is an issue. People think about the morality of, if this becomes a reality, where's the morality? Can we actually, should we live to be that long? All right, so let's go over to reality. And so I'm not going to pose these far-flung questions to our Dr. James Nelson from the Barshop Institute, because you are a real scientist and you deal with reality. So tell me about the actual science that you're involved with in youth extension. What there's so many different areas. There's comparative biology. There's certain chemicals and hormones that people are looking at. But you're focused on what area, Dr. Nelson?
Two areas that are related.
Okay.
The areas are interventions that can actually, as far as we can tell, slow down aging processes, or at least some of them, and at the same time extend lifespan. And the areas that I've been working on are calorie restriction, which is an old, long-studied area in the science of gerontology, and more recently, potential drugs that can be administered that can affect longevity and health span.
And these would be drugs that could mimic caloric restriction?
Well, that was one of the ideas at the outset of these studies, was to find what are called calorie restriction mimetics, so that theoretically, assuming that calorie restriction would work in extending healthy lifespan in humans, which we still do not know the answer to, that one would be able to do something less painfully for most people than diet.
Well, yeah, so because caloric restriction is really hard. It's not easy for an individual to master, because we're talking about a person eating basically a handful of grain a day. It's pretty tough stuff.
Well, I wouldn't say
a lot of leafy greens.
I wouldn't say it's that. the data is still not totally clear, but the data in rats suggests that it's not what you eat, it's how much, or I should say how little you eat, that determines longevity. So it could be, the evidence is not that it's the reduction in protein, not the reduction in fat. We know less about the carbohydrate component, but it's the reduction in total calories that can be beneficial in species in which calorie restriction works. So the problem, though, is many people, I think, know who've tried just plain dieting, even cutting back your intake by 10 or 15% for a long period of time is a difficult thing to do.
But we see a big connection between a sugar intake, insulin, also, and obesity and the age-related illnesses.
Correct.
And so people have kind of said, well, if I can cut back on my sugar, if I can get my insulin under control, maybe that will have, I'll certainly be a healthier person, and maybe I can avoid some of the age-related problems that we have. Because aging is not necessarily a thing that just happens. Aging is a catch-all phrase for many different symptoms that happen to people, like loss of bone, loss of muscle, loss of flexibility. And we'll talk about that more when we come back. We're going to keep talking about age extension, longevity, youth extension, and what it means for society. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. Join the conversation. The number to call is 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about living to be 100, 150, maybe even longer, living as a healthy person, a person who is still able to contribute to a society with a job and a robust function and thriving, not slowing down. What does that mean for society? What would it do for relationships and church and family and finance? Would it rip society apart? We would have to reinvent many of our institutions. That's a question that Sonia Arison poses in her book, 100 Plus, How the Coming Age of Longevity Will Change Everything from Careers and Relationships to Family and Faith. And also in the studio with me, have Dr. James Nelson from the Barshop Institute at UT Health Science Center, where they actually do research and they're trying to crack the nut. How can we make people healthier longer, and you know, trying to get people to live 150 years, not exactly on the radar screen for you guys at the bar shop, but you are looking at, you know, just dealing with some of the symptoms that we call old age, right? And how those can be treated individually or maybe as a whole. Maybe there's a magic bullet. What are y'all looking for?
Well, the idea behind research on aging, I think, can be put simply. There are many diseases that occur as we get older. What's remarkable is that if you look at any one of these diseases, be it heart disease, cognitive impairments, even your likelihood of surviving an automobile accident, any of these factors that can kill you, the likelihood of them doing so doubles every 8 years after the age of 35. So that's one way of defining aging, just an increased probability of having a death-inducing event as you get older, increasing probability. And what's remarkable is food restriction was the first intervention that was shown in rodent models, rats and mice, commonly studied, to reduce the likelihood of any of these diseases happening or killing an old rat. So the idea being that gave us some insight into the possibility that one intervention could affect all of these processes at the same time, as opposed to trying to understand how to prevent heart attacks or how to prevent cancer, which are all valid things to do. But this was, you'd get a lot for one single intervention.
All right. Well, I do want to get Sonia back into the conversation. Sonia Arison, author of the book 100 Plus. So what do you mean by this? So give me some more examples of what this would do for our society. Why would it challenge society if suddenly they did discover a magic pill that could make me live to be 150 years old?
Right. Well, and that's a good question, actually, about whether or not it would happen as a magic pill or, you know, slowly over time, or slower anyway. And I think how it happens actually matters, because if it suddenly happens overnight, then that will be quite the change, and we really do need to prepare for it. But, yeah, a lot of different things will happen. Most of them are good. When you look at the economic perspective, assuming that people are living longer healthier, you know, health is related to wealth. You can't work if you're sick. And, you know, the more healthy people we have, the more people who can work and be productive, and that grows the economy. And so, you know, economists have done a lot of research, as I mentioned, on this. And, you know, one study I'll mention is, I think, quite significant from Harvard. They show that if there are two countries that are identical in all respects, except that one has a five-year advantage in life expectancy, and this is only 5 years, and we could be looking at a lot more than that, then the real income per capita in the healthier country grows at about 0.5% faster than in the less healthy counterpart. And that's a really big deal.
Well, let me ask you this, you know, about social change, because, you know, generally the younger people have more modern ideas, and say, like now with civil rights or and freedom, equality, and now we have to wait for maybe the older generation to get out of the way. If they never get out of the way, then does society slow down in trying to, you know, expand freedoms and become and deal with those issues?
Right. I think that's a very good question. And, you know, I think that's one of the points at which we'll have a lot of tension between different generations, not only in terms of ideas on civil rights, but even the more mundane between, you know, think about a working environment where you have, you know, the 22-year-old just out of college with somebody who's maybe still 100 years old working in the same office.
Yeah, you got to wait for them to retire, to move up, and they never retire. Then what's up with that? What about, you got people who are in prison and they're sentenced to life in prison? Suddenly, their life in prison can now be 150 years old if you give them the treatment. Do you do it?
Right. That's another very good question. I think that's a point where society will have to look at that and say, okay, well, you know, life expectancies have really extended. Maybe we need to revise how we deal with punishment and, you know, trying to rehabilitate people.
And so, but to haves and have nots. Already, medicine is pretty much, you know, if you're very wealthy, you can get a different level of medical care than if you're not. If this is something that is for the elites can now live to be 150 years old, but the plebs, no, not so much. They still got to be, you know, drop off at an earlier age.
Right. I think that is the biggest problem that we could be facing, because already we have huge divides, not only internationally, but even within our own country. I mean, on the international scale, it's, you know, you look at the CIA fact book at life expectancy numbers, and Monaco, which is, you know, a very wealthy country near France, you know, average life expectancy there is around 90 years. When you take a look at Angola, average life expectancy in that part of the world is 38 years. That's a 51-year difference. I mean, that's practically an entire lifetime. But then even within our own country, you know, you take a look at, you know, Native American males in South Dakota have a life expectancy of 58 years compared with, say, Asian females in New Jersey who have a life expectancy of 91 years.
Sure.
I mean, that's a 33-year difference.
Right. So, but you're way ahead of the curve, nowhere near, science is not ready for this yet, but you're, are you saying that we need to think about these things now and sort of prepare society for when that discovery is made?
Yes, I think we do. We need to start talking about it now, because there's a lot of things that we're going to need to work out. And not only that, but, you know, another reason why I wrote the book is I think a lot of people have no idea that this is even a possibility. You know, there's going to be social issues, but it's also the situation where, you know, for sure my children are going to be part of that generation where they get to live to, you know, maybe 150. But I'm not so sure that I'm going to be in that generation. And I think we need to work really hard to support the scientists and change our policies and do everything we can to make sure that, you know, most people who are alive today can benefit from these technologies and that it doesn't move. You know, I'd like to see it move faster and not slower.
A lot of people bring up overpopulation as one of the reasons why we shouldn't do this. But isn't it sort of as longevity has happened that people have dealt with that by having smaller, fewer children and smaller children as well? No, the same size children, but just fewer of them.
Yeah, I think children are actually getting bigger these days. But population is something to be concerned about. And, you know, that was one of the biggest concerns I had when I first started out with this.
Okay.
And it turns out that it's not as big a worry as you would expect.
All right. Well, Sonia, thank you so much. Good news. Great to hear from you. Thank you for staying with us. And thank you also for in the studio, Dr. James Nelson from the Barshop Institute, a scientist studying youth extension longevity at the Barshop UT Health Science Center. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Wayne Coble is the TPR program director. Kish Udaly is the web producer. Get production help from Catherine Dixon. Check us out online at tpr.org. Support from The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.